see everyone. It's a cold winter morning. Was talking with Papa before the lesson, and he said, you know our rule here? And I said, no. And he said, no matter how long the song service runs, take all the time you need to finish your sermon. And I said to him, well, you know it's going to snow. And he said, it's not going to snow till later. And I said, you don't know how long this sermon's going to be. But I get hungry too. But this is really, I think, an exciting time for me. This is almost part of a dream here to begin to finish the Gospel of John. We're going to pick up with chapter 13. And in my career, I've done two tries at this. We're preaching at a small congregation. This is up at Dahlonega, Georgia. Got to the sixth verse and they hired another preacher. Nothing on me. We were looking for a full-time person anyway. But then, recently, I tried to get through it in a Sunday morning class. And this was great. I finally got the meat of John is in these chapters, 13 through about 17. One of the most powerful discourses, I think, in the whole Bible. And then the congregation decided they wanted to study something altogether. So here I am trying to finish out and starting with chapter 13. I'm not starting at the beginning again. But one of the greatest things we get in the Gospels, and I think sometimes we forget this, is we go through and teach, and I certainly have done this, is we look for great lessons from it. We look to find doctrine and meaning, but oftentimes we forget that there's a Jesus here. There's a person to get to know. One of the greatest concepts, difficult for me to get my hands around, is Emmanuel, God with us. As John started out, the Word became flesh. And to get that, it takes a little time, it takes a little thought, and try to some orientation toward really knowing, who is this Jesus? Who was this Jesus who was in the flesh, just like every one of us, just like the person beside you? God was in the flesh. John tells us he lived with us in splendor, in grace, in truth. To imagine a person like that really stretches the imagination, who was 100% not an abstract God who we looked, you know, to heaven, but we don't really ever see, but a person in the flesh like you and me, who lived out a life of splendor, grace, and truth. Reality, a concrete God, not strictly a God in our imagination or a God afar, is the time, you know, in this time and those times and the gospel times and even before. Gods who lived as wooden images and stone images and things like that. But this was a God who literally dwelt among us, who bled like us, got hungry like us, suffered like us. A great God to get to know, for all to see. And one of the themes through John for all to see is that God is love. That's going to be a theme through chapter 13. And as we look at it, keep that in mind, we're going to see Jesus expressing his love in many different ways, just as we saw through the whole gospel. Just to set the scene, this is the final Passover for Jesus. He's gathered with his disciples, and these guys have seen everything. They've seen John's witness to Jesus, literally, and the Spirit descend on Jesus. They've seen tiny private miracles, like the miracle at the wedding feast at Cana. No one really saw that but the people who were in the kitchen. Many reaped the benefit. But Jesus was doing this, really, out of respect for his mother. You know, he told, don't tell anybody, but his mother said, you do this, and he did it. Here we see a God of love in that the most trivial thing, or seemingly most trivial thing. Here's a wedding feast in the middle of nowhere in a poor country. And these folks have run out of wine. And Jesus really doesn't appear to know them that well. But his mother says, take care of that. Make some wine, and he does. Jesus loves, God loves, even the seemingly trivial parts of our lives. And he tends to those. Just as we love out, it's in the trivial things, I think mostly, that we express our faith, that we express our love. The small things that seem to matter very little are the things that matter the most. And Jesus, in expressing his love, showed that to us. They saw public miracles. Jesus, in John, healed two blind men. One was grateful, the second one, but the first one, if you go back and read, was neither faithful nor grateful. He's indifferent toward Jesus, just kind of, you healed me, great, now I can go on my way. But in this, we see a heart of love that even though Jesus wasn't appreciated, he did it anyway. A friend, a healer to all, even those who didn't love him. And that's a tough challenge for all of us, to love those who don't love us. Sure, Jesus said, love your enemies and pray for them. But how many folks really do that well? We get our challenges throughout our lives to do that. We get better at it if we continue in the faith. I know I had a boss once who was really taught me that lesson. And I'm grateful forever because she really taught me what it was like to pray for an enemy. Difficult person to work with. Of course, it was all her being difficult. But no, it was tough. But you learn these things. If you have your eye toward God, if you have your heart open to the Scriptures, the lessons come to you when you need them. And then you build and build and build. That's how Christ's love was for his disciples, even on earth as you went through the time. So we have that. Jesus fed a multitude. They were hungry. They just needed food. He didn't know how faithful they were, how grateful some of them might have been. But nonetheless, he fed them, cared for them. And finally, the dramatic and I think heart-wrenching scene of Lazarus, when he got sick and when he died and when he was resurrected, Jesus recognized human grief in human loss. Didn't come in and say, hey, there's no problem here. Why are you crying? I'm going to resurrect him anyway. But Jesus felt the pain of loss, identified with the loss of Lazarus' family and his sisters, and he literally wept. And here we see a God. Now, I always date myself with examples, so bear with me. Anyone remember Star Trek, Mr. Spock? Yeah, if you got Spock, yeah, young guy, perfect, yes. He was like almost a computer, you know, in the flesh. Everything was no emotions and this and that, and it was very reasoned out. But this isn't Jesus. Jesus is not a God who's like Mr. Spock. Jesus is a God who hurts with us, who feels with us, who understands what it's like. Because Jesus cried real tears. He identified with people who were grieving. Not because they were small or because whatever, but because he was in the flesh, just like us. The Hebrew writer writes about our having a mediator who was tested in every way. And this is how Jesus can be our Savior, can mediate to God for us, can come for us so we can be reconciled because he knows what it's like perfectly, intimately. He may not have experienced it all, but he saw it all. He saw people who hated, yet he was able to intercede for them and continues to today. He saw people who had a long way to grow up, even in the faith. He stayed with them and just like us, prays for us today if we do the one work. And that's another lesson, but the one work that he said in John was believe. So if we continue to believe, Jesus is with us. Jesus, of course, gave great teachings. And that's where sometimes it's easy to see a God who's cold and distant and just spouts out great things and talks about great things. But these great things were the greatest. He was one with God the Father. He was the life. He was the truth. He was the way. He was the liberator. Jesus was great things, or he spoke great things, but he also showed the courage behind them. Jesus dealt with constant and growing conflict. Started out, it would have been safe to stay in the hill country, maybe be famous for a few miracles, but not really go out among his enemies, among the people, to draw people, but he stuck with it. Through the scribes, the Pharisees, the lies, the persecutions. Jesus, out of love, stayed focused on what he was about. He was patient, very grounded in reality. When I say grounded in reality, Jesus accepted things right now just for the way they are. Didn't look at you ought to be this way, you should be this way. All of these things that we like to guilt one another or even beat up ourselves. You know, I should do this, I should be perfect, I shouldn't have said that. Jesus always came to people to meet them. For instance, even the woman at the well, who was pretty much lost in adultery, but nowhere near as lost as those who would have stoned her and killed her. But Jesus accepted her for right where she was. Then led her forward. Powerful thing to study if you have the time. It's a great discourse of Jesus showing his love, showing his acceptance, and then leading forward. So now Jesus and his disciples are faced with a difficult time. The nation is divided, many faithful, many unfaithful. The powerful folks were really the folks who were unfaithful, who wanted to put him to death. He wasn't what they wanted. The disciples had to face a lot of fear. Because think about it. Jesus had told them he was going up to Jerusalem to be killed. You had masses on both sides, great faithful people who a couple days before welcomed Jesus with his triumphant parade into Jerusalem. But you had other powerful people, the law, if it were, the government, who wanted to kill them all. So they faced it with fear. Jesus faced the situation, we find out later as he prayed, in pain and sorrow, with the certainty that he was about to face. Yet he stayed with his disciples through this, continued to teach them. We start off in the first three verses. Before the Passover feast, Jesus knew that the hour for him to leave the world had come and go to the Father. He loved his own in the world, and he loved them to the end. The devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. And during the supper, Jesus, knowing that the Father had put all things in his hand, that he had come from God and is returning to God. So Jesus knew all these things. He knew the betrayal. He knew the pain that was coming. He also knew the triumph. But now he was faced with one treacherous, but the rest scared and uncertain disciples. But he had more to say to them. They needed to hear more. They needed to learn how to live as his disciples in the world, and we're going to talk about that later. They needed to know how to stay together. And here Jesus showed them the priority of their life and the way they were to go out in the world, that even though he would be with them no longer, the world would know that they were his. So we start out in verse 4, probably pretty familiar with it. Jesus arose from the supper, set his garments aside, took his towel, wrapped it around himself, and he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to dry them with a towel. He came to Simon Peter, who asked, "Lord, are you washing my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not understand now what I'm doing, but later you will." And Peter exclaimed, "You will never wash my feet." And Jesus answered, "If I do not wash you, you have no part in me." It's a difficult thing, and there's a lesson here for us. But Jesus talks to Peter kindly. They still didn't understand that while Jesus was Lord, first and foremost, he was also their servant. And that's a tough thing to get around. Most of the way that we look at power and authority is we serve it. It doesn't really serve us. It doesn't care about us. But Jesus is showing here he cares. And if you can't accept his love, if you can't accept his service, you really have no part in him. This is one of the big differences we have, and probably throughout the last couple millennium, discussion over, you know, legalism. I'm going to work my way to heaven, as opposed to accepting the grace and truth that Jesus gave us. Think about it. We have to accept Jesus first. If we think that's all about service, it's all about obedience, it's later. First, it's about accepting Jesus. It's about accepting his love, and it's about accepting his grace. And unless and until each one of us can do that, we truly have no part in Jesus. As he spoke in Matthew, we're not much different than the whitewashed sepulchres, which are graves. They're whitewashed on the outside, but full of dead men's bones. We have to have that part. We have to accept love. We have to accept Jesus' service to us gracefully. It's a hard thing for us, or at least a lot of us. Because how many folks really enjoy people doing something for you, serving you? You know, it's like, I'm sick, and oh, don't do anything for me, please. We don't like that, or at least most of us don't. But Jesus is saying, unless you accept that, you don't have any part in me. So we have to accept him. We have to accept his love. We have to accept what he does for it, willingly, graciously, in the spirit it's given, and that's in love. And that can be a hard thing, but he's saying to do it. It's a paradox. A couple here. First, we have to serve, or we have to be served in order to serve. We have to love after we're loved, after we accepted it. This is how our, I think, faith is perfected, how our love is perfected, by first submitting to and accepting Jesus' love for us. It's a difficult thing, but we can do it. And then Jesus gently, he kind of compassionately teaches Peter and others. You know, he speaks more as a friend, as a wise guide, not as a God who, Peter, boom, you're never going to get this. Even at the end of the chapter, Jesus had a way of dealing with the present, not being judgmental, but just putting the facts out. When Jesus, you know, Peter said, and this is verse 36, he asked, Lord, where are you going? And Jesus is going out to be arrested. He's going to be betrayed, finally going to the cross. Jesus replied, you can't follow me where I'm going, but you will later. And Peter continued, why can I not follow you? I'll lay down my life for you. And Jesus answered, will you lay down your life for me? Truly, I tell you, a rooster will not crow until you denied me three times. Doesn't call Peter faithless. Doesn't call Peter a fool, even though we often do in our sermons and our lessons. But he gently corrects Peter and just stays with the truth in Peter's mind. If we, as Christians, as God people, simply look at things through God's eyes and accept the truth as it is. You know, we certainly fall short. We do some great things. What we do great, certainly, is to glorify God and in His glory. And let God gently correct us. Not beat us over the head, not beat each other over the head, but here, look at things as they are, accept them, and then overlay Jesus, the Spirit, the love of God, the power of God onto them. That's how we're going to change. That's how we're going to grow. That truly is how we're going to blossom as Christians. In the same way that Peter and the rest of the disciples there blossomed as apostles. It would only be a couple weeks before they were ready to go out into the world. In really less than a week, they were ready to start preaching and bring people into Christ. Huge change. But again, it was through Jesus that they did this. So we also see a Jesus, as we get to know Jesus, who could be disturbed, one who could be troubled. I know as a kid in my mind, grew up as a Catholic. A lot of great statues, but Jesus is always either on the cross suffering or just like, and if you look at all the icons and the saints, they're all kind of like this. Very peaceful and all. But Jesus would be disturbed. He could be troubled. I've heard people say, I didn't handle that very well and this and that. And how oftentimes we have new things come into our lives. You know, people sometimes die on us and the first time through, first couple times through, painfully difficult. And you might look at, I could have handled that better. Or even some other really horrible life thing. You know, people who get divorced and it's a tough marriage and they finally get out of it and say, I should have handled that better. Jesus is telling us here, even through his own life, is we're not going to handle things flawlessly in the sense we're not going to get disturbed. We will be disturbed. We will be thrown off sort of our balance because we will be emotional and those emotions are a normal human reaction. Just as Jesus wept in the garden. He grieved in the garden. But what did he do with the emotions? Gave it to God and went forward. That's a huge lesson to us that we see from Jesus in the flesh. In spite of the frustration, the pain, the agony, the betrayal, he accepted the emotions that he had. Not, I shouldn't be emotional. No, he accepted. He wept in the garden, wept tears. Gave it to God and went on. So we can't beat ourselves up over emotions. Jesus didn't, but Jesus carried forward into God, and that was a great thing. And that's our example of Jesus. He felt as we feel. Now, one of the things that we get farther here is we can identify, and this is a big switch, between an abstract God, even the God of Israel that they didn't know, in us, and certainly the people who encounter Jesus, is we can identify with Jesus intimately. Not because he's God, but because he was God in human form. So we can identify with that human form, that person who would sit beside us, who we could tell through the five senses. You know, we could see that just as they saw. They could feel, they could touch, they could hear, all of these things. This is God. God is not a remote concept. God was and continues to be a reality, and we know that through the testimony that we have of Jesus. So imagine that. Bring your God. If your God is way up here and you pray way here, you don't have to bring that God down, but don't do what God did. We have a Jesus who's here. We're going to find out through the other chapters of John. We have a Spirit that's with us right there. Not an abstraction, but as much a reality as anyone, for instance, in our lives who was there and maybe gone and out of it now. Well, Jesus is that reality. He's there for us. Real forms, not an abstraction in our mind, but in a real sense. And when we pray, when we face difficulty, when we face temptation, when we face good times, even when we all sing together, knowing that Jesus is here to bear us through, to sing with us, do all sorts of great things because, again, God is not so proud as not to take on this human form. So we can go forward with this Jesus, a God who could look us in the eye, let us him look, him, yeah, we could look him in the eye, he'd let us, and go forward. So God is literally with us. Now, kind of the climax of the chapter, Jesus is starting to tell them how to live with one another after he was gone. This is chapter, or verse 14 and 15. He said, it follows then, that if I, the Lord, I do this a lot. I get the wrong part done. Anyway, Jesus was talking about a new command. I'm not sure what verse this is, but I know you'll find it. And their command simply was to love one another. Different translation of this is it's a fresh command. Kind of different, because and that's how people would know that they were his disciples, by their love for one another. Now, that seems obvious. Well, of course, but not so obvious when we look at our experience. In their time, they could tell they were disciples of Jesus. The world could tell because they followed Jesus around. They were with him constantly. But he's saying, even though people aren't going to see me, here's how they'll know. It's by your love for one another, literally from me. So it's a big thing, because how do we know? It wouldn't be by jewelry, wouldn't be by dress, it wouldn't be by tattoos or anything else like that. It would be that they loved each other. Now, each other, he says, as Jesus loved. Again, it seems like obvious, but it's important here. Jesus says it at the end. He told them, taught them to love God, love their neighbor, love their self, even love their enemies. But why would he include love each other? It wasn't always that way with God's people. We're studying from the Old Testament as we go through Joshua. We'll get into Judges. Israel fought with each other all the time. They fought each other going into the Promised Land. They fought each other over an accent. One said Shibboleth, the other said Thibboleth. Civil war, your side, my side. God's people fight among one another. It shouldn't be so, because Jesus is saying, here's how you're going to know they're my people. Not by circumcision, not by any of that stuff, but if you love one another. And that's a reach. That can be a very difficult thing. One of the proverbs we have, in our own life are sayings, familiarity breeds contempt. We can know each other so well that sometimes it's like you start to look for the negative. Or those little things, those unresolved conflicts get bigger and bigger and bigger. And there's a metaphor I could use here about something most of us went through as teenagers, but I'm not. But that just blows up. Bad thing. God said this is not how it's supposed to work. You are supposed to love one another. Not be divided by anger, by wounds, by hurts, by conflicts that you don't want to take on. One of the things I used to do, I used to be a volunteer mediator, and we'd do court mediations. Most of the time it was families. And it was interesting. They really couldn't handle it on their own. We had one case where folks got into, this is a whole family of adults, like my age, about that, got into a fight in a hospital nurse or a hospital emergency room because grandma was going into the nursing home, and they were fighting over stuff. They were fighting over everything. Had they had a mediator, someone to help them, and they finally did, they could take on their problem and resolve it. Just as us, we don't want help, we don't want that, but turn it over to God, turn it over to other people of peace so that we can be reconciled, we can heal these wounds. Get over yourself sometimes in your ego. Anyone ever treated or seen a brother or sister treated badly just because somebody didn't like them? Some cruel jokes. Ha ha, I was just kidding. You're really ugly and you're stupid too. Ha ha ha. It's not humor. It's cruelty. Yet we see it among the brotherhood in ourselves. We are different. Every one of us is different. Certainly in this congregation, it may not be large, but you look around and you can see a lot of differences where people came from, who they are, who their parents and grandparents were. Yet we're united in one thing. And that's the love of Christ. When we lose that love, that again is from God, not imitating God, but the text tells us it's from God, then we've lost everything.
It's a necessity. We need to support each other in our spiritual growth and our spiritual warfare. And it takes time sometimes to deal with pain, to deal with weaknesses, to deal with conflict. But we can do it. Because the hardest relationships, I think, where we deal with conflict, as I said earlier, are those closest to us. Family relationships. How many families do you know that are fractured? You know, a good friend of mine, probably my best friend, we've been friends since 1962. Four brothers, and none of them talk to one another. They all grew up together. They're close in age. But over time, they lost that. It's no longer a family. And then when we look at the family of God and people coming in, who wants to be a part of a family that fights, that's really indifferent about one another, you know, where maybe big brothers and big sisters bully each other? Anyone who remember growing up or kids, do you like to go to a house where the family's fighting? You know, it's like, I'll pull out a name, you know, the Smiths. Well, I don't want to go there. Their parents are always fighting and the kid were always fighting. Where do we want to go? Two things, a peaceful house and one where the mother cooked great desserts. But that was it. So Jesus, even as I loved you, not behavioral, but from his heart, that's where we get our love. That's where we express our love, by becoming one with him. He gives us the love. We don't have to learn how to love on our own. Jesus gives us to it. Later on, we're going to find it comes through his Spirit. But we can do that. And again, we don't have to do it on our own. We can grow in Christ. And when we, like Peter, really get to accept Jesus' love first, fully embrace it, not kind of out here. You know, we like to pick on, why would God love me? There's a lot of reasons we don't embrace Jesus' love. It might be too great for us. We seem it. Again, it might be that I'm not worthy. Take your pick. But the point is, we have to embrace it. Once we do, we overflow, and we can give that love to others. Not our love, but truly the love of God, the love from God. One commentary I was reading for this said, we can't give love until we accept it. So before we grow, before we really be our best as Christians, we have to fully accept God's love. Whatever's in the way, get rid of it, because we need to accept that love. Pride gets in our way, just as it got in Peter's way when we talked about, I'm going to the cross, don't wash my feet. He said, no, I have to do this. It's an act of love more than anything. And Peter put pride aside to accept Jesus' love. So the question is, you know, what can you not love completely? Whatever it is, turn that over to God. Let his love fill you, and you'll find that you can do it. It takes time. It takes growth. And wherever we are is fine, as long as we're going forward. But we first have to accept that love. Because reconciliation with God, reconciliation with others, truly needs that love, that esteem for one another, that care for one another that we can only get from Christ. So I guess the real question at the end of our lesson is, what do you need to accept that comes from the love of Christ? To accept it more fully? To fill in a hole in your life that you can't quite do on your own? Might be something you dislike, someone you dislike. Might be a really bitter root. We have a lot of bitter roots in our society. If you need an example, turn on the news. Turn on talk radio. There's more bitterness out there than most of us would want. And of course, it's always self-righteous bitterness. Our side is right. Their side is wrong. And then we judge those other people. We're God's people. We don't engage in that. We don't engage in bitterness. We're people from love, of love. We can tolerate that. We know right from wrong, but we don't let it get that bitter root in our heart to where it poisons how we look at others. It poisons how we look at ourselves and gets in the way of us between God. So what do you need to accept in the love of God? I pray you'll consider that over the next day and week. If there's anything here that we can help you with, let us know. We'll pray together or do what we can. So we stand and we sing.